We start our second hour. Welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. All right, your phone number is 1-800-636-8686. It is toll-free. It's good in the U.S. It's good in Canada. I am in Southern California. I would love to hear from you. You can follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome, and you can email me directly at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. As promised, we start this hour by having a conversation with a guard for the Minnesota T-Wolves. 9 points, 4 rebounds, and 2 assists per game this season. He just finished up his second season in the NBA. He was an all-conference player at Georgia Tech. He was the 20th pick overall in the 2018 draft, and he partnered with Kyle Rudolph to deliver food, water, and supplies to Minneapolis on Friday. We are joined right now by T-Wolves shooting guard Josh Okogie. Josh, really nice to have you on the program. Before we get to everything that's been going on between you and the team of late, what have the last 2 weeks, Josh, been like for you personally?
First of all, I just want to say thanks for having me. But the last 2 weeks, they've been full of mixed emotions, personally. Two weeks ago was kind of more devastating because, you know, this is actually, I think, the 2 week, you know, period where, you know, George Floyd, died. And that first week was kind of, like I said, devastating because, you know, we've seen this time and time again, but just the extent of, you know, the way he died in the film and just watching the film. Initially, I couldn't even watch the whole film, but you know, after really being able to digest everything, I was trying to figure out ways to help, ways to use my platform to help the community and raise awareness to this subject. So, first I attended the press conference. I was able to do that with Steve Jackson and my teammate Carl Anthony Towns at the City Hall, and after that, I was able to, you know, kind of talk to different news platforms to. Trying to, you know, express my feelings and emotions and express how wrong this whole situation is. But last week was more of a better mood feeling, I would say, because I was able to get into the community and to help out any way that I can. The community did a great job of cleaning up the streets. So what we did is me and Kyle Rudolph, we partnered up together and we had supplies, necessities like, you know, children's or baby products like baby wipes. We had pharmaceuticals. We had a station where people can receive medical help. We gave out non-perishable items, food. We had – I even brought my chef out to cook for the community. We had DJ. So it was kind of fun just to give back to the community because that area where, you know, where the Target was looted and the Cub Foods was looted, that's the parking lot where we actually stationed everything. So the area was hit pretty bad, so we were able to – give back on that.
I appreciate that. Josh Okogie is joining us. Josh, you mentioned Steven Jackson. Why was it important for you to be at that press conference at City Hall with Steven Jackson?
Just so people know that I'm taking a stance. I didn't even get the chance to speak, but just to be there for me was very insightful to know, to feel the pain that other people are feeling and to kind of show them that, you know, I'm feeling the same and just to show the community, like, look, man, this isn't right. This isn't right. And for Steven Jackson, obviously a Houston native, to come to this city, I wanted to, you know, let him know that, you know, we have his back.
You know, Josh, you made the point also that when you see George Floyd, you see yourself, you see your brother, and you see it happening in Minneapolis. What is that like for you?
It just shows me that it doesn't really matter, you know, who you are. Like, as long as you got, you know, this skin tone, like, you're not removed. I was in Atlanta when Ahmaud Arbery, you know, died. And, you know, just seeing that, you're like, wow, this happened, you know, not too far away from me. Then I come to Minneapolis and George Floyd dies. And it's just like, man, like I tell everybody, it's only a matter of time until, you know, an opportunity like this come knocking at my front doorstep. So I have to do something about that now before it affects me or anybody I'm close to. And it's definitely wrong. And it's a problem that we've been having for a long time. And I think there's no better time till now to face this issue.
We're talking to Josh Okogie. You know, Josh, Carl Anthony Towns is dealing with the passing of his mother due to COVID-19. First off, what was your reaction when you first heard that she had passed away, and what's it been like watching your teammate deal with a tragedy like that the way he has?
Man, when I first got the news, I was really devastated, you know? Because I actually kind of knew it was like she was a little ill before she passed. So I was always checking in on Carl and Carl always done a great job of, you know, keeping his spirits high. But when she, you know, God finally called her in, I made sure, you know, I always, you know, texted Carl as much as I can to make sure, you know, he has his support. But, you know, Carl's probably one of the most lively spirits you'll ever meet, man. And if anybody could get through a situation like this, it's Carl, and he's been doing a great job of, you know, keeping his spirits high. I mean, I know nobody can really endure a loss like that, but, you know, even a guy like that to be selfless and leave his comfort of his family and to stop mourning for a little bit to come to a press conference that, you know, he didn't have to come to, I think that's just great.
It says so much about him that he's dealing with all of that, and yet he comes to the press conference to support the family of George Floyd and make his presence known. I think that speaks volumes. That says so much about him. And then in a conversation with The Athletic, I thought you made a great point. You said, quote, "I'm a big believer in things we ignore become our standards. If we ignore acts like this, then this is who we are as a people. That's why I can't ignore this. I can't condone this." End of quote. I mean, can you go deeper on that? Is that what's motivating you to take the action that you have?
Yeah, 100%. These issues, they happen time and time again. And, you know, we see posts on the news, we see posts on Instagram, posts on Twitter, and a lot of people ignore them. And as a society, like I said before, when you ignore something, it becomes your standard. It's no different than, you know, if I'm, you know, growing up as a little kid and I don't make my bed after I wake up, and if my mom didn't say something, I would never make my bed after I wake up, because that would be the norm. You know, if my mom tells me, "Look, Josh, every morning after you wake up, you must, you know, make your bed," and that now that becomes a standard because she said something about it, she saw an issue, and she did something about it, and that becomes a standard. So now, if I don't do it, I know in my head, oh, it's a problem, and I'm going to get punished for it. See, if she ignores it, in the back of my mind, I wouldn't even know it's a problem. One, and second, you know, I'm gonna ignore the issue. So that's as a community, as a society, we have to do the same. When something like this happens, we can't ignore it. We can't ignore it. We've been ignoring it for years, and unfortunately, it's become our standard. But I mean, now is a great time to, you know, look it in the eye and start doing something about it. So now we can have a new standard of accountability.
More now so than ever before. So, Josh, what is your reaction when you hear people say that athletes should stay out of things like this?
I think that's ridiculous when people say that. It's definitely ridiculous because, one, God has given me a platform, you know, to speak out. And two, I'm not, you know, removed from any of this. Like I said before, this affects me. You know, George Floyd, he had a mother, he had a father. I mean, yeah, he had a mother, he had a father. He even has kids. You know, I mean, I don't have any kids right now, but, you know, I have a little brother. I have older brothers. I have an older sister. You know, all these other athletes, they have kids as well. And those kids can be subject to something like this. So why wouldn't they be able to speak out? You know, this is not an issue where it's like, oh, non-athletes can speak out, or it only affects non-athletes. No, this affects everybody. And as long as I'm living in America, you know, I'm subject to this.
All right. So, for instance, if it's impacting you and it's affecting you, you should speak out on this. But does it also feel like an opportunity or a spot where athletes can lead and inspire change?
Yeah, 100%. I'm from Atlanta, so, well, Metro Atlanta. And, you know, just to see Jaylen Brown, you know, drive all the way from Boston down to Atlanta to start a protest, that was big. That was big. And, you know, me and Jaylen go, you know, way back since high school. So to see one of my, you know, fellow brothers, you know, start that was incredible. You know, and to see guys like Malcolm Brogdon, you know, joining him as well, it just shows that, you know, it's huge. And to see all the people following behind them, it's huge. You know, it just shows you, like, you know, athletes, they can spark change too. You know, they have, you know, like I said, they have a bigger platform. They can gather a lot of people together to make change for the common good.
So, Josh, for instance, what kind of conversations have you and your teammates had over the past few weeks?
I would say about my team in general, my team has done a great job of opening the floor for conversation. We have Zoom calls every week, and, you know, if we need to talk about certain stuff, we talk about certain stuff. And, you know, the coach's staff is right behind us. And my teammates, we're always looking for ways to help. If there's certain protests, some of my teammates will we'll go to those. Like when I did the thing for the community with Kyle Rudolph, all the coaches, you know, came out to support. Some of my teammates came out to support as well. Just the issue is, you know, everybody's not, obviously, because I don't think we're going back to the season. Everybody's not in Minnesota right now, but you know, you see D'Angelo Russell. You know, he led a protest this past weekend. So just to see, you know, different people in different states just taking part in this in their communities is great.
So really quickly before you go, the event that you had with Kyle Rudolph, how did that come to be, and then what did it mean to you to be a part of that?
So I was actually looking for ways to help the community. And, you know, it was oddly enough, Kyle reached out to me. It was like, look, Josh, what's up? You know, I have this event that somebody reached out to me about, how would you like to do it with me? And I was like, hey, man, I'm 10 toes down. And I really commend Kyle for that because, you know, as a guy of his skin color, to be able to start an initiative just shows you who America can be, you know, in a time like this, man. Even to see all these protests, you see all different kind of races coming together to fight for blacks. You know, it's great to see, and it meant a lot for me to work with them and to do what we did. And like I said, just to do it at that location where, you know, everything was kind of in ruins, it was great.
Josh Okogie partnered up with Kyle Rudolph. They delivered food, water, and supplies to Minneapolis on Friday. He is a guard with the T-Wolves and much more than that. Josh, I really appreciate you. Great to have you on the show, and thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate that, Josh. Thank you. Josh Okogie, 1-800-636-8686. So again, what I'm doing with this is what I did the last week and the week prior. It's still the main thing. And there's a lot going on around the nation that does not relate to sports. And this is a sports show. And I know some of you are looking for an escape. So we're going to continue to do what we're doing. Address the issue. Talk to those who are involved. And continue to do the other things that we do on the program. 1-800-636-8686. I've got an open segment coming up next. If you want to take advantage of that, go right ahead. Therese Paylor joins me at 40 past. We will talk to him about the issue and the NFL. I've got a player profile coming up. Aya Frady, a multiple smack-off winner. The oldest of the old school. He has not hit it up for a couple of years, but maybe this is the year he makes his return. Either way, he's going to get the jungle treatment because he is an OG. He's earned it. All of that is still ahead. In addition to that, a pizza. I don't even know how to describe this story. It's crazy. What if you were to wake up and every day for 10 years, somebody delivered a pizza to your house that you did not order? It's like some kind of crazy pizza terrorism or something. I'll have that for you. The mystery pie. 1-800-636-8686. We've all heard of Casper. You know, the sleep company with outrageously comfortable products at not so outrageous prices, from award-winning mattresses to pillows, sheets, and duvets. Casper is transforming the way we sleep, one snooze at a time. And now you can help Dad upgrade to the comfort of Casper with the Father's Day sale. Save 10% on any mattress order or get $25 off when you spend $100 or more on great gifts for Pops. Now through June 23rd, the original mattress provides the support and cooling that you need with the comfort you love. Four layers of premium foam are designed to provide pressure relief for all-night comfort. Keep your back aligned with zone support. It's designed to provide extra support from bedding, bed frames, even now a dog bed. Casper has everything you need to complete your dream bedroom. And as always, free shipping and non-contact delivery. Offer excludes bundles, the Element mattress, and sale items. Limit one offer per customer and order. Please see casper.com/terms for additional terms and conditions.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Justin in Melbourne with the bump back. Another jungle video on the way back in. It is not too late. Send us your videos. They're smack off related. We are using them. Join Michael Breed as he tees off on the top headlines in the world of golf. Watch Course Record with Michael Breed today, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific on CBS Sports Network. An open segment right here. Therese Paylor joining me next segment. In hour number three, we'll talk a little smack off. Remember, you got a $5,000 grand prize. The winner of the smack off gets $5,000. Runner up gets nothing. Third place gets nothing. Nobody gets anything unless you win. It's a winner take all event. And that's made possible by my guys at Four Sharp Corners. Four Sharp Corners is the world's largest seller of PSA graded sports cards. They buy and they sell the highest quality, highest graded sports cards. You can find them at foursharpcorners.com. I appreciate those guys because they reached out to us and said, hey, we're all about the smack off. We want to be involved. What can we do to help? I said, if you want, you could pay the winner. They're like, we can handle that. We'll take care of that.
Straight cash, homie.
Straight cash, homie. $5,000 to the winner. Nobody else gets anything else. 100% to the winner. Smack off is in 11 days. 11 days, again, is not 11 shows. June 19th. All right, so back to Conor McGregor for a minute. On Saturday, he announced that he was retiring. So he reaches for his phone, and then he thumbs out the following. Quote, hey, guys, I've decided to retire from fighting. Thank you for all the amazing memories. What a ride it's been. Here is a picture of myself and my mother in Las Vegas post one of my world title wins. Pick the home of your dreams, Mags. I love you. Whatever you desire, it's yours. End quote. So, Conor is retiring again. All right, Conor, I'll play along. Why are you retiring? How come this time? This is what he told Ariel Helwani. Quote, the game just does not excite me, and that's that. All this waiting around, there's nothing happening. I'm going through opponents' options, and there's nothing really there at the minute. There's nothing that's exciting to me. He went on, quote, they should have just kept the ball rolling. I mean, why are they pushing Khabib versus Gaethje back to September? You know what's going to happen in September. Something else is going to happen in September, and that's not going to happen. I laid out a plan and a method that was the right move, the right methods to go with, and they always want to balk at that and not make it happen or just drag it on. Whatever I say, they want to go against it to show some kind of power. They should have just done the fight, me and Justin for the interim title, and just kept that ball rolling. End quote. All right, so normally that would be the lead story of the day. A superstar, a legend, an icon, the biggest name in his sport, walking away in his prime. Ordinarily, that is huge news. Like, enormous news. Except in this case, it's not huge. Oh, Alvy. In this case, not only is it not huge news, I'm not sure that it's even news at all. Because we've been down this road before with Conor, and more than once. Remember back in 2016, when he tweeted, quote, I have decided to retire young. Thanks for the cheese. Catch yous later. End of quote. So he pulled that in 2016. That retirement lasted about a month and a half. He ultimately came back from that, quote, retirement, and he beat Nate Diaz at UFC 202. Then there was the, quote, retirement in March of 2019 when he tweeted, hey guys, quick announcement. I've decided to retire from the sport, formerly known as mixed martial art, today. I wish all my old colleagues well going forward in competition. I now join my former partners on this venture, already in retirement. Proper pina coladas on me, fellas. End quote. All right, cool. So he retired a second time. That retirement lasted about a week. And then he came back and he beat the Cowboy earlier this year. And at that point, Conor was talking about wanting to fight three times in 2020. Quote, I had my goals, my plans, the season. I had everything laid out. Obviously, the world has gone bleeding bonkers at the minute. There's bleep all happening at the minute. They want to throw me up and down, weights, and offer me stupid fights. I don't really give a bleep. I'm over it. And then, as further proof of how emotional he is about this, he said, quote, I'm trying to get excited. I'm trying my best. And when the Anderson one came along, I was like, yeah, bleep, that's a mad fight. And then everyone said he's old and over the hill. I was like, what? Fighting a former light heavyweight and the middleweight goat and the actual goat in my eyes, and that's not a rewardable fight? And you know, you're actually right. It wouldn't be rewarded. I would go in there and put him away, Ariel, and then what would happen? They'd say he's old and he's over the hill and he's past his prime and all. End quote. All right, so as we complete the hat trick with the third retirement, the question is, how long is this retirement going to last? How long? Dana White himself does not seem to be sweating this at all.
One of the beautiful things about this sport is you don't have to fight. This isn't the NBA or the NFL where you better be at practice, you better show up and do this, you better do that. You don't have to do anything here. And if these guys want to sit out and retire right now, or anybody feels uncomfortable in any way, shape, or form with what's going on, you don't have to fight. It is all good. So if that's what Connor's feeling right now, John Jones, Jorge Masvidal, you know, I feel you. It's not like I'm going, holy, this is crazy. This is nuts. Nothing is crazy and nuts right now, because everything is crazy and nuts right now. So on a certain level, I totally understand it and get it.
That makes sense to me. You know, that message was not just for Connor. You heard the other guys that he mentioned by name. That message was also for John Jones and Jorge Masvidal and everybody else who's threatening to quit or retire if they don't get the fight they want when they want it. What Dana's saying is, hey, listen, you don't have to fight. If you don't want to do this, you do not have to do this. And, you know, from Connor's standpoint, I do get where he's coming from. By all accounts, he wants to fight. He really, really wants to fight. And if a fighter, especially one of that magnitude, really wants to fight, you got to get him a fight. Especially one as important to the company and promotion as Conor McGregor. I get that side of it. You know, it's a good thing he wants to fight. He doesn't always want to fight. So when a guy like that wants to fight, it would stand to reason you better find him a fight. Except from Dana's standpoint, there is a business side to this. And that business side is that Conor has massive upside at the gate. 6 of the 7 top MMA fights in Nevada history are Conor fights. He is the biggest ticket draw in the sport, and it's not even close. For instance, according to the state of Nevada, Conor Habib had a gate of more than $17 million, the biggest MMA gate in the history of that state. Second on the list, Conor and Cowboy. That was more than $11 million, a fight that pretty much everybody on the planet knew Conor was going to win. And it still brought in more than $11 million in ticket sales. So that's what we're talking about in terms of gates. Having him fight right now with no fans would mean leaving a ton of money on the table for Dana White and the UFC. He's got to be concerned about that. I mean, it's different than having Amanda Nunes fight in an empty room. It's different from having any other fight in an empty room. That's how massive Conor still is. So I get why Dana's not rushing him to Fight Island, because that would mean leaving north of $10 million on the table. And for instance, if Conor Habib was more than $17 million at the gate, what would a rematch be? Or what would Conor Gaethje be? And at the same time, if Conor does fight right now, if you give him what he wants and you let him fight right now and he loses, how much does the UFC lose as a result of that? Then you get no gate from that fight, no justification for a Conor Habib or Conor Gaethje fight. You can make the argument that by letting Conor fight in an empty room, the UFC stands to gain very little and can lose everything. But then again, at the same time, we don't really know when the fans are coming back. I think that's Conor's point too. How do I know those guys will fight in September? What if something happens? And if you're waiting for the fans, how do we know when they're coming back? And when they do come back, what kind of numbers do they return with? That's the calculus here. That's what Dana is trying to deal with and trying to navigate. While at the same time, deal with John Jones. And at the same time, deal with the BMF title holder. Or hey, Masvidal. So how long can you delay Conor? And can you delay it long enough to have $10 million worth of tickets sold? Or do you just have the guy fight in an empty room and give up that 10 mil? It's a really tough question to answer. And I don't even think there's necessarily a good answer to that question. But Dan has made it pretty clear. He wants Conor to wait until we have the outcome of Habib and Gaethje, because that would be one of the biggest fights ever. But that means Conor's going to have to wait another 6 or 8 months. I mean, it's pretty clear he doesn't want to wait 6 more days. What would you do if you were Dana White? Do you get Conor a fight right now and put him on the island, or do you wait? There's a lot of risk in doing that. When we come back, a senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports Therese Paylor joins me. Let me give you another phone number. If you want to leave a message, hit this number up, 949-385-0447. We play those messages, those voicemail messages, on our podcast. 949-385-0447. Therese Paylor is next. Top of the hour, I've got a smack off player profile on Aya Frady. And before all.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
We bump back with another smack off video. That was Philip in Corona. If you're watching us on CBS Sports Network. All right, phone lines are still open. They are coming up on the other side of this, but we're joined right now by a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He's also a Hall of Fame voter. He's the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast. He is Therese Paylor. My man, Therese, there are a lot of things I want to talk to you about, but before we do that, how are you doing, and what have the last few weeks been like for you?
Appreciate it. I'm doing okay. I'm doing good. I've been heartened by some of the events of the last couple of weeks. Been stressful just kind of seeing everything that's going on in the tragedy after George Floyd's death. But I do believe the heart of life is good, okay? So I'm very optimistic about the amount of people that have shown up in the streets to let people know that wasn't okay and to try to get real tangible change.
Therese Paylor is joining us. You know, as you have written, quote, "To be black in America is to live in a constant state of complex emotions," end quote. I mean, some of the emotions are frustration about 400 years of inequality and the basic fear that something could happen to you at any time due to an unfortunate encounter with the police. So how do you process and live with those emotions? What is that like?
Well, honestly, Jim, you just get used to it. You know, I grew up in Detroit, first person in my family to go to college. And I was fortunate to have an amazing home structure, mother, father, loving family. And that really helped me kind of accomplish some things in my career I'm incredibly proud of for my family, okay? And my mom actually listens to you too, Jim. So
I like that.
You'd like
nice.
To hear that.
Good.
She loves you, actually. Anyway, you get used to it. And there's definitely a sense of share community when we do well as a people and individually, but it's always important to remember to reach back and help others, and I've certainly tried to do that. And honestly, part of that sense of community comes from knowing that, you know, like you said, for 400 years, for at least 350 of them, there have been laws and all kinds of things baked into kind of the fabric of the country that have led to the socioeconomic challenges that a lot of African Americans have, right? So it's something that you know, it's something that you have to use as motivation to kind of strive forward. And, you know, it's tough because you do get reminded of it every now and then, but, or certainly more than that, depending on what month it is. But I will say, you know, that has motivated me throughout my life to accomplish a lot of things I never thought I was ever going to accomplish.
Therese Paylor is joining us once again. You know, so go back to Wednesday, if you would, for a minute. Drew Brees said that he would never support anyone disrespecting the flag. What was your reaction, and what went through your mind when you first heard those comments?
Well, I knew what was coming, Jim. I think the African-American players that I've talked to, the biggest reason they're frustrated is because there's always the equivalency of kneeling during the flag and disrespect. And the thing that's frustrating about it is because multiple times they said, hey, you know, this is not about disrespecting the flag. In fact, multiple times players have said, hey, we love this country too. Marcus Peters, you know, I used to cover the Chiefs on a full-time basis. And when he was in the locker room, it was a big, you know, hullabaloo about him, you know, sitting during the anthem. But I interviewed him one-on-one about that, and he was really earnest, honest, and sincere about how much he loves this country, and he wants to see it better as well. You know, and I think the reason that it's so frustrating is because while I think you and I can agree, Jim, the great thing about America is you have freedom of speech. We can all look at something differently and have a different opinion about it. The problem is on this specific thing, many people who don't give legitimacy to the causes of police brutality and the causes of racial inequity use that, the flag, disrespect of the flag, as, and maybe they don't even know they're doing it, but by bringing it up and like hammering that point home, it's a way to take away and distract from the message they're trying to hit home. And I can't tell you how many players have told me that. And that's why it's so frustrating. And that's why I spoke to DeMario Davis on Friday. And that's why I wrote a story on Friday about, hey, listen, you know, Trump said this. Drew Brees said this. Roger Goodell said this. But the thing that really matters, don't forget, are these causes. Many people can agree on the causes. Don't fall for the okey-doke, for this other stuff coming. That stuff doesn't matter. What matters is these causes, these players really genuinely care about, because even if they haven't had issues in some of these areas because their money has protected them from that, they may have had it when they were younger, or they almost certainly know somebody who did. So that's why it matters to them, and that's why they want you to remember to focus on these issues in real tangible ways to help them fight for those causes.
Therese Paylor is my guest, and yes, I do agree with you when you say that. You know, Brees himself has apologized for the remarks. What do you make of the apology? And then how much work does he need to do to earn back the trust of his teammates?
I'm pretty forgiving. So, because we all make mistakes, right? Like, we're not perfect. We all have things in our life we look at and we say, God, I'd like to have that one back. You know?
Sure.
But, like, you know, I talked to DeMario about this, and this was even before he released the rebuttal of Trump on Friday night. You know, the important thing to do is when you make a mistake, you own the mistake, you say why you were wrong, which Brees has done, and then to truly move forward, and this is what relates to your question, Jim, you have to give that person grace, okay? Now, DeMario Davis is a team captain, very good player, very well-respected, a member of the Players Coalition. And he said this. He's like, I know it's hard to give people grace because black people have been giving people grace for 400 years in this country, right? But that doesn't change the dynamic of how you heal from that as a team. Like, he admitted he was wrong. He explained why he was wrong in it in countering Trump. And now as a team, they got to go out there. They got to give him the grace, accept that apology, and move forward. And I think from Drew Brees' perspective, and this is really the challenge of America in general when trying to heal this rift here, you got to make real tangible changes, okay? You got to do things to make people, African-Americans, understand, hey, we understand the issue. We're trying to fix it. So, like, you have to keep this same energy. This can't be a 1 or 2 week thing. If you feel some sort of way about what happened to George Floyd, you need to keep that energy and do things in your own life and your workplace to help African Americans. You need to do things at the ballot boxes to help African Americans. It's got to be a conscious choice you make and something that you have to do. And I thought, he told me that was a microcosm, you know, what the Saints locker room has to do is a microcosm for America. And I thought that was really prescient, and that made a lot of sense to me. So I think that's the best way to answer that.
We're talking to Therese Paylor. What you're saying, in fact, you wrote this as well, quote, black Americans need your help. Nothing is going to change until Americans in general are determined as black Americans are to change things, quote, end of quote. I mean, it truly is a powerful challenge. Can you just elaborate on that for a moment? And what are you looking for people to do? People who are listening, what would you like to see?
Well, it goes, I mean, first it starts with acknowledging the problem. Like, you do that. It's like, okay, hey, black people have been talking about this for decades, but especially in the last 4 years, okay, this has coalesced to this one point. So you got to recognize, okay, we understand that there's an issue here. We're going to have empathy for that issue, and we're going to support legislation and policies to help change it. Now, that's a big answer, though. If you're at home and you're wondering what you've got to do, it's as simple as honestly staying in touch on the news. You got to look at local elections. You got to read your local paper because they actually do a really good job covering your local issues. They really do. And that goes beyond the opinion section. Don't worry about that. The news size sections, they cover what's happening in your community. Read them. Find out what ballots what legislation is on the ballot, and then vote accordingly. I think we've got a really unique opportunity in this country right now because there's so much support behind this cause to make a real dent in something that African Americans have been dealing with for decades. And I mean, honestly, Jim, you know, we've seen a lot of videos over the last weeks and last months and last years, right? You know, I think the thing you got to remember is if you're tired of hearing about African Americans complain about this stuff, imagine how tired, you know, we kind of are complaining about it. And one more thing, in that way, cell phones have been a good thing because, you know, I remember even my parents telling me stories about stuff they'd heard or seen and how I need to act if I'm ever in an encounter with police, right? And that is a common conversation African Americans have. So, you know, in a lot of ways, people are now just kind of seeing what African Americans have been talking about within our own communities for a really long time. So I think, honestly, Jim, it just comes down to having an open heart, an open mind, having empathy, and really doing some work on your own and figuring out what you can do to support legislation and policies to help change these things.
Therese Paylor is a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports joining us once again. So before you go, you had the video that was released from Michael Thomas, Patrick Mahomes, Tyrann Mathieu, and other stars, a powerful video. And then the commissioner, Roger Goodell, released a video in response to that. What was your reaction to his video?
You know, I'm glad he did it. When I've done reporting for other stories about the NFL trying to solve its diversity problem, I've heard from multiple people that Roger Goodell wants to like fix this, right? And part of being an ally to a community is like admitting there's a problem and doing it in a public way. And I think it's relevant that he did that on the same day that Donald Trump tried to give Drew Brees kind of a pat on the back, because that's not something that he would have. I mean, that's just not something that they did a couple years ago. I mean, Lord, the NFL tried to do as much as they could to stay out of Donald Trump's crosshairs. So from that perspective, that was meaningful. And we need to acknowledge that. But I think going forward, two things we got to recognize. Number one, he's the commissioner, but he doesn't represent all 32 owners. Like, at the end of the day, you know, these owners, you know, they have to kind of come aboard that as well, right? So there's a certain limit to how much influence just Roger Goodell saying that has. The second thing, though, is that, okay, you made this statement, you made it clear where you're at, again, which is a challenge for all of America because America is only 13% black, you know, keep that same energy going forward. That's what the NFL has to do. They've got to keep the same energy going forward. So that means when players start kneeling in the fall, which they almost certainly will, you know, you don't start diving into things to, like, curtail it. Like, let players have their freedom of speech, support your players, and keep this thing moving. And most importantly, don't let the kneeling thing become a distraction to these common cause. These causes are what matters, not the kneeling, right? That's the point. Don't get distracted by that part of it. You got to remember, hey, there are different things here that the players want to fix. Don't just support them on the kneeling. Make sure you have real tangible efforts to help them on those other fronts to actually make real change in the areas of police brutality and racial inequality.
Therese Paylor, my guest. All right, so last thought. To your point, there are going to be players kneeling. How do you think the league is going to respond when they peacefully protest racist police brutality in 2020? How different will it be this time?
Well, I think Goodell, and this is why it's important that he did it, he'd look like a hypocrite if they take, like, tangible change against it now. Like, you know, he's kind of put himself out there now. Like, by doing it, the indication is that you kind of are okay with it, that you're good with it, that you're going to let players peacefully protest. And there's strength in numbers in that way. I think the more players who do it, the more the stronger the cause is going to get. So I think because Goodell made the statement, my hunch is that they're just going to let it ride, but it's also on those teams to let that be the case too, and the 32 owners. Because Roger Goodell works for them, and at the end of the day, you know, they still call shots.
That to me is what it comes down to. I mean, he can have that video, and I think that's a good start, but that can't be the end of that. And it's going to be about the 32 owners and how they react this time. He is a senior NFL writer for Yahoo. He is a Hall of Fame voter and the co-host of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast, Therese Paylor. Man, good to get caught up with you, Therese. Appreciate you.
Anytime, Jim. You know that.
Yeah, man. You too. Have a great day. Thank you very much, Therese Paylor. So additional food for thought. And again, I understand that a lot of you have had about enough of this, but it's not going away, nor should it. Nor should it. If this will make you feel better, I'll read you this. Hey, Rome, the easiest way for pizza every day for 10 years is to just not wash your face. Signed, Johnny Manziel. Yeah, that didn't elevate the conversation. That's not helping me. All right, so in the third hour, when we come back, it's an open phone hour. We've had all three of our interviews. Also, it's time to get in another Smack-Off player profile. Today, the multiple champ, Iafredi, gets his due. That's coming up next segment. 1-800-636-8686. Also, this terrifying story about the mystery pie. And another MMA angle. Stipe is coming back to the cage, which means that he and DC may have a date. And that would determine the GOAT of the heavyweight division. One more hour is still ahead. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Don't